Hello and welcome to the People Who Read People podcast with me, Zach Elwood. This is a podcast about better understanding other people and better understanding ourselves. You can learn more about it at behavior-podcast.com. I was recently asked by Mahima Samrek to be on her podcast. Her podcast is called Breaking the Facts. She talked to me about my struggles with anxiety and mental stress, which happened when I was in college. My mental struggles culminated in me dropping out of college suddenly mid-year. In one of my earlier podcast episodes, Mahima had heard me talk a little bit about that experience, so she wanted to ask me more questions about that in the hopes of it being helpful to college students and other young people. I've sometimes considered writing a book about my mental struggles just because I think it might be helpful to young people going through similar things. There's not that many books that talk about those topics from a personal perspective. And maybe one day I'll work on that, but in the meantime, I try to talk about those topics when I can, to do my part to let people know that they're not alone with their struggles and that even when life seems extremely hopeless and horrible, it can get better. A little bit about Mahima. She's a student at the Indian Institute of Science Education and Research, Mahali, in India. She's currently a final year master's student majoring in biology and science communication. She's been doing her Breaking the Facts podcast since 2020, and on that podcast, she discusses topics ranging from philosophy to mental health. One of the things she focuses on with her podcast is mental health for young people, as it's something that she thinks should be talked about more in Indian society. Okay, here's the talk with Mahima, reshared from her podcast, Breaking the Facts.
My dear listeners, I am a sufferer of anxiety. There are voices in my head that belittle me, that pull me down, that make me overthink in ways that I don't want to. And I feel some days so lost and alone that I don't even know what to do in order to move forward. But I also remember that anxiety is common, and there is somebody out there in that little closet, locked in a room, suffering from a panic attack, not telling anyone in the fear of being marginalized. So I made this episode, and I dedicate it to all who suffer in pain and hold out this episode like a candle, just to make them see that there's light when we become vocal, when we talk. I hold this episode close to my heart, for I have a very, very special guest with me today, named Zach Elwood. It is a great honor and privilege, my dear listeners, to introduce Zach Elwood to you today. Zachary is the author of Reading Poker Tells, which has been translated into 8 languages. He is also the author of Verbo Poker Tells and Exploiting Poker Tells, along with being the creator of Poker Tell radio series. And the way that I was introduced to Zach was from a tweet on how to deal with anxiety. And it was then that I was further introduced to his podcast, which is called People Who Read People. Link is in description, which is a very well-known behavior and psychology podcast. And on this podcast, Zachary interviews people who use behavior and psychology in their work. He also tackles political polarization-related topics with the focus of psychology behind that. Zach has had amazing reviews from Scott Stossel, who is the national editor of Atlantic, to Daniel Whiteson, who is a physicist and the author of We Have No Idea. I sent Zach an invite to my podcast after listening to one of his brilliant episodes with Stossel titled Living with Anxiety. And as a person who identifies as living with anxiety, I related to that episode more than anyone ever could. Graciously, my dear listeners, Zachary agreed to come to my podcast today and have an informal conversation on how should we deal with anxiety, let alone live with it. So here's a conversation that I will cherish forever, and I present to you now. So as I told my listeners, today I have a very, very special guest with me, and I have already introduced Zachary, but he will introduce himself again. So first of all, Zachary, thank you so much for coming. And thank you so much for talking about anxiety with me, because this is something that I suffer myself. So can you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure. My name is Zach Elwood. And a little bit about me. I'm most well known for my book, my books on poker tells, aka poker behavior. I used to be a professional poker player. And I also have a psychology and behavior podcast called People Who Read People, which is pretty popular, gets a good amount of listeners. And then the reason, yeah, we talked, you and I talked, was me talking about some of my anxiety issues, which I've always had, and ended up led to me dropping out of college in the middle of the year due to some mental issues. But yeah, that's a little bit about me.
All right. So the first question that I really want to ask you is, you know, you were a poker player, right? So like, how did you venture this journey as a poker player to a podcaster? Because it's like, your podcast is like a huge thing right now. So I just want to know, like, why did you want to do it?
Yeah, that's a long story, but I'd say in short, basically.
No,
oh yeah. Yeah. No, I'll make a short version. So when I was young, my parents, I was always interested in psychology because my dad had these random psychology books laying around the house, you know, on the bookshelf, like Freud and other early psychology books, and also modern psychology books, because he was a indexer for books. So he had some modern kind of academic books. So I was always interested in these things because I'd read them when I was a kid. And then I was interested in poker too. I used to play poker at my friend's house. So that led to me taking interest in poker in college. Like, I got more serious about it and I was setting up games in college. And then that led to me, one thing led to another, and I was playing for a living in my mid-20s, playing poker for a living when the poker boom was happening in the United States. It was really popular because poker was online. You could play poker online, and also an amateur poker player won the World Series of Poker, which led to more interest from mainstream people in it. So there was a lot of interest in poker. So I played for a living for about 4 years or so, where it was my main source of income. And then since then, it's just been a side thing. And then in 2010, I started working on my book, my first book about poker tells, because I was surprised that I just thought that there weren't good books out there. Like, there was a real lack of strong books, and there were things that I knew and things that I knew other people knew that hadn't been talked about. So I wrote that book, and then one thing led to another that got popular. I wrote other books and did a video series. And then I created my, I wanted to do something else that was more mainstream general audience. So I did the psychology and behavior podcast to, you know, as a way to express my interest in those things too, that I've always been interested in. And that's gone pretty well too. It's been fun.
Yeah, it's going really well for you, right? Like, it's considered, like, it's number 8, if I'm not wrong, in US at the moment, and Canada as well, right?
It gets about 25,000 to 30,000 listens total per month. So yeah,
it's amazing, seriously amazing. And also, like, when you completed your book, just wanted, like, it was the first book, and you got a very good response from people, am I right? So
yeah, that was the it was really encouraging. It was because I didn't know how it would be received. I wasn't, like, a, you know, I'm not a well-known poker player or anything. I'm just I was nobody in the poker scene. So I didn't have high expectations, but I had some pretty, you know, pretty experienced and professional poker players and recreational amateur poker players. A lot of people say that it was really good and really helped them. And that, you know, it's been translated into 8 languages just due to the number of sales and the reputation it got. So it was just really encouraging to have people respond in that way, which I didn't expect or count on, you know? So it was just really nice. And, yeah, encouraged me to do more work in that area. Yeah,
it's amazing, right? So, like, Zach, I want to ask you, like, how do you define anxiety? Because, you know, there's a different definition for all, and you were a former poker player, right? And poker is all about reading tells, and it's about playing. So I just want to know that, what's your perspective on how do you define anxiety?
That's a tough one. Yeah, defining anxiety, I would say off the cuff, without preparing the definition much, I would say it's a state of, you know, it's a state of feeling like something is going to go very wrong. It's a state of feeling like you don't belong in a situation, or a feeling like something is going to go terribly wrong. You know, in almost a life and death way, you know, it can be that bad. That would be my rough definition of just feeling like this tremendous, like I'm going to die or something worse than death is going to happen to me.
Yeah. I completely relate, because I, as a person, suffer from anxiety disorders as well. And, you know, like, to understand how to react when you are diagnosed with anxiety, it itself is a pretty huge thing, especially in a country where people don't understand what mental health issues are. So, like, how did you, you know, as I said, like, you were a poker player, right? So given poker is all about reading tells and everything, so how would you, you know, how would you advise people to deal with anxiety?
I see it as a separate sphere. Like the, poker is definitely like a trivial application. I do think that my experience with anxiety and my mental struggles when I was young, I do think in some way, you know, helped me be more aware of like what anxiety looks like. I feel like I can sense anxiety pretty well in other people, not necessarily always at the poker table, but I mean, in general. But I'd say, you know, my recommendations are, you know, just that it's good to talk about these things. It's good to be open with people and to seek out help. And it's good to, talk openly about it like we're doing now, and be honest about the struggles, because I feel like so many people have these struggles. It's such a human condition to be anxious. And the more we talk about it and be honest about it, the more it helps people with their struggles. Yeah.
Yeah, you're completely right. And it's very important for us to speak as well, right? Because unless and until we come up and we say that, you know, we are suffering from this, people won't understand that what we are going through. So like, to identify as somebody who is suffering from anxiety, or to identify as somebody who is suffering from depression itself takes a lot of effort. So, I completely relate whatever you said right now. And in one of your episodes, Zach, I heard with Dr. Zai, if I'm not wrong, if I got the spelling right, I have no idea, like pronunciation, right? So it was everybody heard it in 2020, if I'm right, right? So you mentioned that you had a very high level of like anxiety and mental health issues in your college. So what happened, if you're comfortable telling? Yeah, go ahead, please.
Sure. Yeah. That would... I actually want to write a memoir about it one day, because I'd like to go into detail and have people read the book that I would have liked to have read, you know, when I was going through those experiences. But yeah, to make a long story short, I suffered from anxiety from a young age, like my first day of high school, which would have been, you know, if your listeners don't know what high school is in the United States, it's about age, you know, 13, I think, when you enter high school. So my very first day of high school, I had panic attacks, and I was filled with anxiety because I went to this new school with all new people and such. And was really depressed and anxious my first 2 years at that school. And then finally started making some friends and feeling more normal the last 2 years of that school. And then I went to college, and that kind of started over again, where I felt really fish out of water. I felt like I didn't belong at this college. And didn't have real friends. I was hanging out with people who I honestly just didn't like. And I was also smoking too much marijuana, which was another factor there, which is linked to, you know, having some bad mental health outcomes. So all that stuff led to me. And I think a big factor of this is just feeling really inferior, you know, which people can feel in a lot of situations, you know, whether it's like college, school, work. You know, you can feel I'm not as good as the people around me, or I'm not as socially skilled as these people, or I'm not as academically skilled as these people, all kinds of inferiority thoughts and social anxiety about, you know, I can't relate to these people, or I can't talk to, you know, members of the opposite sex or whatever it may be. So I had all these, you know, various inferiorities. And so that culminated in me becoming increasingly kind of, you know, I had sort of having some panic attacks, where I became increasingly what they call derealization or depersonalization, where I felt like things were increasingly less real. And I kind of, and looking back, I think I was on the verge of some sort of psychotic break, but because I just felt increasingly distanced from reality, and it became harder for me to even go to class, and my grades were dropping and, you know, getting much worse. And I could like barely talk to people and stuff like that. And I felt like a million miles away from everybody in my head. Luckily I had the knowledge. I kind of knew what was happening to me because I'd read a good amount about psychology at that point. So I had some sense of reality to call my parents and tell them to pick me up. So I got out of school like in the middle of the semester in my second year of college.
Yeah.
And left school and didn't come back. And then I just felt I was in a really bad place mentally for years, because I had high anxiety and high depression and kind of felt like I was on the verge of losing my mind, really. Mm-hmm. So then slowly but surely, like, things got a little bit better over the years. I went to another college, and which was less stressful academically and socially for me, and slowly but surely, like, got more social connections and, felt more and more normal, I guess you could say. But that's kind of like the long story short of it. And I think, that could have gone any number of ways. I kind of feel like I was lucky, like things could have easily been much worse, you know, through luck of the draw, through random chance, through, if I had like a little bit less coping mechanisms, if I had like less idea of like things might get better, you know, which, you know, are just things that we learn about when we're young. You know, we get these narratives about, oh, will things get better? Will they not get better? How much hope do we have that things will get better? You know, all these things are sometimes out of our control. But the thing I think is good for people to realize is like things can seem really dark and disturbing, and like that you're basically never going to get better. But, you know, they do sometimes get better. Not to say they always get better, but keeping that idea in mind that they do sometimes get better for people, and knowing that you could be one of them is a good thing to remember if you're in a dark spot. Yeah,
hope is all we have, right?
So it's very important.
It's very important to have that in mind, specifically when you are suffering from issues that you cannot talk about openly. But then, Zach, you just said that, you know, you dropped out of college and you dropped out of school because of this. Now, in India, what happens is, if I say that I have mental health issues and if I drop a year because of that, people will frown. People will ask me questions that, why are you, you know, this is just a state of mind. This is just, you need to sleep more. It'll be fine. But it doesn't get better. It doesn't. Sleep does not make everything fine. Sleep does not stop the thought process in your brain that is making you crazy every single day. So, like, how would you compare what you just said right now, if the exact thing had happened to you in a country like ours, where talking about such things openly, even that is considered a sin at the moment? So, like, how would you deal with that then?
Yeah, it's really tough. I mean, because I think even in America, like, or the West in general, we're more open to these things, but I still feel like it is such a stigma. Like, when I went through it, even though I kind of knew, I had a sense, you know, that people struggle with these things, it was still super hard for me to talk to anybody about it. I felt like I was in my own world and there was no one to talk to. And there was a tremendous amount of shame about it. Even just to talk to my parents about it, because sometimes you don't have a great relationship with your parents, or you feel like you're going to let them down, or that you're embarrassed in front of them, even in the best of worlds. I think it's really tough to know what to do in those situations. I mean, I think that is one of the things that lead to worse outcomes with mental health wise is just not having the belief that one can tell other people about these things. Just makes you feel that much more isolated. So it is really tough, because I can imagine a world in which I didn't feel like I could reach out or tell anyone about what was happening to me, and then it would have just gotten worse, you know, and who knows what would have happened. But I think if I, you know, my recommendations for people in that scenario where they don't feel like they can tell anyone and there is that stigma, I mean, I think just try to find any friends, family members who are most likely to be, you know, to understand those things and tell them what you're going through, or a counselor, you know, hopefully there's someone that you could find. Usually there's even free mental health services sometimes. I don't know. Yeah. It probably varies about availability in different mm-hmm. places, but just try to find someone that you can tell these things to and realize that like, this is such a common thing. I think that's what's so often missing and so surprising is just how common these things are for people to go through these things. And knowing that they're so common can help you weather the storm a little bit better. And knowing that like, oh, there's many people that end up, you know, happy and do all right in life that went through these really hard times. And, you know, that alone can be very valuable. But other than that, yeah, I'd say just trying to find somebody you can talk to about these problems. Yeah.
Yeah, you're completely right. Finding somebody to talk about the problems, that itself takes a lot of effort in a country like ours. But like, you know, I think where we can start is by letting people know that they're not alone fighting their battles, right? That there are other people suffering. Like you said, that, you know, when people open up, when people speak, when people talk about these things, only then we can realize that, yes, oh, this is common. Anxiety is very common. It's not something that, you know, and still it's stigmatized is what bothers mm-hmm. me a lot. Because I think every fourth, fifth person that I've met in my class itself has suffered from some sort of anxiety breakdown or some sort of nervous breakdown in the classes itself. So yeah, I completely agree when you said just talking about all these things and finding a person who can help. India recently launched this helpline number, toll-free helpline number on the occasion of World Mental Health Day. And it's a pretty big initiative, but we still have a lot to go, I believe, because it's still stigmatized here. It's still stigmatized and it will take mm-hmm. a long, long time to, you know, come into terms with talking about such things openly. So
well, I think, one thing in that area is, you know, I think, you know, even in the West in America and such, it, even though there is less of a stigma, it's still so hard to talk about because I think, you know, there can be this feeling of like, oh, that happens to people with, you know, specific biological problems or these specific mental problems. And that that's not me. That's not me. That's this other group of people. You know, people don't have a sense that these things can happen to anyone. Yeah. They kind of try to categorize it as like, oh, that's this other group of people that are not me. So then when it happens to them, they feel like, oh, I'm broken in some way. I'm in this category of people that are broken. Whereas the reality is these are just very human things that happen to so many people and can happen to anyone in the right circumstances if things go the right way. And so I think, yeah, a big part of it is like, even in the West, there can be, you know, there can be a lesser stigma, but there is still this stigma in the sense that people view it as like, oh, this is this other group of people and it's not the normal people, you know?
Exactly. I completely understand. So when you open up and you say that, you know, I am suffering from this issue, I have bipolar, I'm schizophrenia, I am suffering from anxiety disorders, they change their perspective towards you and look at you like as you're weak and you cannot do work. But that
they feel afraid in some way, like, oh, you're broken or what. I think a big part of it too is like people somewhat are aware that, you know, like they're afraid that talking to people with these problems could affect them in some way too, though, you know, like these people can make us more depressed or anxious. So there's that anxiety for people too. And that's another reason people try to block it out of their minds is like, oh, that this is really going to depress me or make me anxious to deal with people who have these problems, you know? So that's another reason we want to lock it away sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, I completely understand. Exactly. Yeah. So, like, I think talking helps, I guess, Zach, right? Talking about mm-hmm. this helps. When you open up and you speak, that really, really helps a lot. So in your opinion, you know, in a country like ours, where talking about such issues is just like frowned upon, I want to know your perspective on how we as youths, because like we are the youth and we are a lot of people. So how can we bring a change in our nation regarding mental health stigma that still is going around?
Yeah, I think, one thing I've thought about doing, and I think other people could do is, for the people that have had these experiences is to, you know, write memoirs about them, mm-hmm. write their stories out. And even though everyone is different, of course, like if I wrote my story out, it would, you know, it would not be the same as anyone else's story. And we all have our different factors and stresses and things. But I think the key point is showing how, you know, it can get better, and that even when you're in a very dark place in your life, no matter what it is, that it can get better. And also just, you know, the more people, I've just been surprised at how few kind of books like that I've seen, even though I know many people have these kind of stories. And I think, you know, one thing is it's really hard to talk about, of course, and people don't want to revisit those emotions that they've went through is one factor. But I think that if more people did that and like gave talks at colleges or any kind of school to kids, you know, I think that would be really helpful too, is giving talks to kids and to young people. And that helps change the culture and that openness and showing, you know, Hey, look, I'm kind of normal you know, socially normal now. And I had some really rough times, and it's not the end of the world for you if this does happen to you. I think doing those things and just having some more people taking that step which sometimes takes some bravery and some sacrifice to go out there and do that. I think the more people do that kind of thing, the more helpful it is. Like I think that's the case in the West too. Like I've been surprised how little of that there is about mental health when in the schools and such.
It's not taught at all. And when you open up to a generation that had zero idea about what mental health issues are, and it's not like it's just our generation problem, Zach, right? Our parents have suffered it. Our grandparents have suffered it. Before that, also several generations have been suffering it. It started like when we talked about, like I talked in one of my episodes about like hypnosis. So people used to hypnotize other people so that, because, you know, they were like, this person is not normal because this woman is suffering from hysteria. Hysteria is basically like she's gone mental. So like, let us treat her through hypnosis. But that was something that she was dealing because of her brain. It was a mental health disorder. And unless and until it's taught in schools, and unless and until it's talked about openly, a person will never understand it. Right. So I think, you know, like in a country like ours, where just talking about it is, you know, people just change their entire attitude when you just open up and say, you know, that I have an anxiety disorder or I am suffering from this. So, yeah, I completely understand when you say, but it's going to take a long time. And I think, yeah, it's going to take a lot of time, because I think even in the West, like you mentioned, it's not that evident in the textbooks itself. It's not that evident. Am I right?
Yeah, I think it's talked about in textbooks and talked about, you know, they encourage people to get mental health counseling and such, but I really think there's a lack of, you know, what the specifics are, you know, and I think the lack of the specificity is what makes people anxious, because they don't know what to expect, or they don't know how it's going to go when it happens to them. They feel like, oh, I must be the only person suffering from these specific issues, you know, so I think it's the lack of getting specific about it. But I think, yeah, I think it's a very human thing to want to avoid these things too. I mean, humankind has been avoiding mental illness since, you know, for their entire history, like banishing or locking away people with mental struggles or whatever forever. And, you know, now we just have different iterations of it. It's kind of the same way. We don't like to think about death. You know, we don't like to talk about death, even though it's such a common experience. We'd rather just avoid it because it makes us uncomfortable, you know, but it's such a human experience and a common human experience that we should talk about death more openly. We should talk about anxiety and depression more openly, mental struggles. It just takes the stigma out and makes us more comfortable with them and makes us realize we're not alone. Yeah. You know?
Yes, it's very important. It's very important to understand that, you know, mental health issues should be treated the same way as physical health issues are. And unless and until we reach that goal, I think our entire community as whole, like, even though, like, I am here and you're in the West, we should work together towards making people understand that, you know, physical health issues are okay, but so are mental health issues. And both of them should be given the same priority. Yeah. So like for people, Zach, who are still there, right? They are in this closet. They are still fearing to come out, and they are like, okay, now if I come out, what will happen? and they are identifying, they think that they have mental health issues and they are identifying as someone who is struggling but is not getting help. So for those people who are in the closet at the moment, for those people who are scared to come out, do you have any personal message for these people?
I would say no matter how different or unique your problems feel, that there are reasons for your problems. Like sometimes the way our problems play out can make us feel like we're going crazy in a unique way, or we're going crazy in a way that makes no sense at all. But I would say there is a meaning there, even though it seems like there might not be meaning there and it seems like just craziness, there is a real meaning there. Like there, for example, in my case, you know, when I had my problems, a lot of my sources of anxiety and why my brain was acting strangely was because I just really felt isolated from everyone. And I felt completely alone, you know, in a very existential, visceral way that was not intellectual, but just felt like I really was like on another planet in some metaphorical sense. So I think the, you know, some of the ways that we feel that feel crazy to us do have understandable sources, you know, like from our childhood or just our interactions with others that in our childhood and such, and can lead us to these dark places. So I would just say, you know, try to remember that there are meanings for these ideas that you're having, these stresses that you're having, and try to keep some hope alive in the sense that even if you're in a very dark place, people come back from very dark places. And sometimes it's a passing thing that may take years to feel better with, slowly but surely. But you can get to that place and go through your dark areas, and that can actually make you stronger in life, I feel, because the struggles that you're dealing with are very human, dark human struggles that people deal with and some people avoid, but you're facing them head on. And so in a way, your struggles that can feel really life or death or like you're going crazy, those working through those struggles can make you stronger because you've dealt with some of the hardest struggles in life.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. That was such a moving message, Zach. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming.
And thank you
so much for, you know, speaking about all these things, because I think it's very important to talk about this openly. And this is why, you know, like my entire season is dedicated towards talking about mental health issues. And I know that you are into poker, but you still came and you still spoke about it. So I am really, really grateful for you, first of all, for coming here, for speaking, for talking about openly. And I hope this episode reaches those people who are still in the closet, who feel that they're, you know, they're fighting their battles alone, because as I say every time, that, you know, you are not alone fighting it. So yeah, thank you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, it really means a lot to me that you came. So thank you so much for coming and speaking about these issues. Thank you.
Thank you. It's important work you're talking about, important topics. So thank you.
Yeah. All right, exactly. Bye.
That was a talk I had with Mahima Samrek for her podcast, Breaking the Facts. This has been the People Who Read People podcast. You can learn more about it at behavior-podcast.com. If you like this podcast, please do me a favor and share it with your friends and family. Helping me gain more listeners is the best way you can encourage me to work more on this podcast. Leaving me a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify is also greatly appreciated. Okay, thanks for listening. Music by Small Skies.